Welcome to the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation Podcast with Steve Warren and the coach, Greg Kennedy.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to our program. Some days, I tell you, some days, doing a show over the internet, be enough to make you want to strangle something, someone. Anyway, welcome to the show, everybody. It is the Sens Nation Podcast brought to you by Jim K. Ford. And coming up today on the program, man, you almost have to laugh at the amount of Sens injuries right now. I mean, throughout the organization, not just on the NHL squad. We'll also talk about trade deadline day coming up on Monday. Maybe a few predictions for who will not be here come Monday afternoon. We'll talk about the Columbus loss. They fell 4-1 to the Blue Jackets and a whole lot more here on the Sens Nation Podcast. Thank you for being with us. We hope you enjoy the show. It is Steve Warren along with Greg Kennedy. How are things, Coach?
Well, I'm a little frustrated this morning, as you so casually alluded to, Steve. I'm ready to throw the laptop out the window, get in the car and drive out to the Warren Estate and do it right there in your loft with you.
Yeah. Well, we got the audio portion working, so that's all good for the podcast purposes. So it's all good. It's not all good for the Ottawa Senators right now in that the injury factor has been crazy. We talked about the Matt Murray injury, Greg, in our last episode. That situation worsened. All of a sudden, Matt Murray may be gone for the season, which I find odd. Right. Like, this is a situation where Murray basically got bumped by Nikita Zaitsev. It was a good solid bump, but he finished off that game and he gave up 8 goals in that game. And then that was the end of it. That was like a week ago Saturday. And now they're talking about maybe it's a season ender, even though we still have 22, 23 games left to play. And I was kind of joking this week that among his injuries, there may be a fractured relationship with the team right now. It's starting to look that way. What do you make of the whole Matt Murray thing?
It's frustrating because you don't have all of the information, right? Like, you want to form an opinion, you need to gather facts. And unfortunately, we just don't have them and you don't get them. It's a quote unquote upper body injury. So it seemed that DJ was alluding to it being a neck thing earlier, but now I'm wondering if it's concussion related again. And now there's talk of, you know, like I saw the term LTIR floated out there. Like, is there a way you can Chris Pronger or Pavel Datsyuk this contract? It'd be interesting to see if that's the plan for further down the road here.
Yeah, it just, I think that might be okay with both sides. I don't know, because it's been a Matt Murray mystery. You've got the frequent absences. You've got, he had the COVID issue, of course. Just thinking back, you've got the trip down to the minors and the embarrassment of that and him being defiant. I'm playing the way I always have. You've had DJ Smith kind of calling him out here and there about, you know, goaltending's got to be better. I don't know. It looks like a situation where it's not just injury related, that it's maybe more than that, that these two sides have maybe just had enough of each other.
Yeah, and there's also the whole, remember the little cheeky comment that Pierre made in his press conference about the three goalie question for next year? And he said, you know, that's something that he intimated that may not be what's going to happen for next year. So did he know more then about, you know, we speculated that it was that they're going to move, maybe they move Gustafson in the summer or at the draft. Well, maybe there's something up with Murray that they're going to be able to get out from under this somehow.
That's not the only injury they have to worry about, because at the time I said, you know what, the injury situation, man, it couldn't get any worse. And then this week hits. It's like this week said, hold my beer. Watch this. So Thomas Chabot injured and out for the year. I mean, the end boards have been the Ottawa Senators' greatest opponent. Chabot got run into the end boards and more of a standard body check and just obviously awkwardly went in and fractured his hand. And he's gone for the year. Tim Stützle, not sure about his status. He just missed practice. He might be back in the lineup on Friday night against the Flyers. Not sure. But then you look organizationally. I mean, you can, before you even do that, you can look at the laundry list of injuries. Josh Norris, Connor Brown's been out. And then organizationally, you've had Tyler Boucher out of the lineup. You've had Lassie Thompson's injured right now. He got hurt like a few days ago. Ridley Gregg got hurt last Friday. Jake Sanderson's hurt again. I mean, this is just bananas right now, isn't it?
And there's no goalies.
Yeah.
Right? Like Mandalize's out for the year and something's wrong with Sogard too, right?
That's right.
Like they played the other night with two PTO goalies playing for them for Belleville.
Yep. Logan Flodell got the start because Sogard is dinged up right now. Not sure of his status offhand, but the biggest one, of course, is Thomas Chabot. I mean, he's such a minute eater and so excellent. And he's, by the way, been very good lately in particular, even on that Columbus game that he got hurt in. What a great play to beat his guy one-on-one at the point, go in, find the stick blade of Tyler Ennis to open the scoring in that game. Chabot's playing some of his best hockey right now, and then that happens. Isn't there a little party of Greg that's kind of shuddering, thinking of what the Sens are going to look like from a defensive perspective on that blue line down the stretch here?
Yeah, like what are they going to do? To think about the implications here with the injuries already in Belleville, as you said, Lassie Thompson, who's going to play D up here and still have a lineup down there? And that's a team that has some sort of playoff aspirations. It's just, are we looking at PTOs everywhere, or are the Senators going to go shopping on Monday and find a bunch of 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 defensemen?
Yeah. I mean, anything's on the table right now. It's just about getting the bubble gum and binder twine out and just trying to put together a lineup. And who knows? I mean, if you thought it was going to be quiet on deadline day Monday for the Ottawa Senators before, when you think about all these injuries that are happening right now, they just need warm bodies. So I'm not sure that some of these UFAs that they maybe were thinking about dealing away, they may need to just hang on to them just because they need to get a lineup together. And so I look at the lines from Thursday, Greg. That defense right now, if they have to go with it this way, and I think they do, it's Brännström and Zub, then Holden and Zaitsev, and then Mete draws in. Effectively, he's the sixth man coming in because Shabbat's out. Your 5-6 is Mete and Josh Brown. And I don't know. I mean, to me, guys like if you had Josh Brown as somebody that somebody might give up a sixth or seventh rounder for, I don't think he can go anywhere at this stage.
I think they have to still, though, Steve. I think you've got to still approach this deadline as if everybody were healthy. I really do, because there are guys that need to go. There are contracts you need to get rid of, or there are, quote unquote, well, I don't even want to call them assets, but they do have a couple of assets that they can move. And I think that if you can move them, you've got to move them. Let's not forget Mr. Klevin could be coming out. There's a defenseman. I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I don't know that they had that as a game plan. I think they, I think they're comfortable with him another year in North Dakota, but I mean, who knows exactly, but Sanderson is dealing with another injury. So he's going to miss the NCHC frozen faceoff. He's already missed 14 games this season. And the latest injury that he had, it has nothing to do with the last one. It's completely unrelated to the injury that kept him out of the lineup for 4 weeks in February and March. So he's going to miss more games. He's listed as week to week right now. And I wonder, isn't there kind of like a, I don't know, a silver lining to that? When you think about burning off that first year of your entry level contract, I mean, maybe it's a good thing in the big picture, because Jake Sanderson's expected to be, you know, a cornerstone piece for this franchise moving forward. Why burn off a year in a lost season for the final 20 games or whatever it is? So if he's not able to join the Senators, there's not really much point in signing that entry-level contract.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve. Yeah, it's a savior in a way. You know, it's one less year it's one more year before they have to worry about re-signing him if he doesn't get into those games at the end of this season. And you know he was going to. And really, other than getting some experience, what were you going to get out of having him in the lineup? Of course, right. he may still recover and be here and be able to play. But I can't help thinking about the whole upper body, lower body. And now that legal gambling is legal, I'm still waiting for the NHL to go the way of the NFL with specific injury reports because of gamblers. And that wouldn't that help right about now? Like, I'd like to know what's wrong with these guys. It would certainly ease up a lot of questions. It would ease up potential criticism coming from the media. It would just make everything so much easier if they could just tell us this guy's got this, that guy's got that, this guy's got this, you know, and everybody would know what's going on.
Right. Although the argument has always been that other teams will target those injuries if you get into specifics. Like, but the reality is, you know, for example, all these Ottawa Senator injuries, whether it's Pinto or Batherson or Norris, I mean, we know exactly what those injuries are just by looking at it. It's not like it's a great state secret. So I see what you're saying for sure. So the forward lines on Thursday look like this. It's Tkachuk with Norris and White on the right wing.
Finally.
Then you have Paul with Formanton and Connor Brown, Ennis, Tierney, and Gaudette, Sanford, Gambrell, and Watson. And Parker Kelly was the 13th forward. And he's actually been sent down to Belleville. I don't know. I don't get that exactly. Parker Kelly, I thought, has been playing very well. And he's going to go down to Belleville at this stage of the game. And that could be a paper shuffle. I don't know. But no Stützle in the lineup. Doesn't look like it's a serious thing. Like, they weren't talking about a season ender or anything like that. But it's a lower body thing. And he's questionable for the game against the Flyers on Friday night. But what do you think about Parker Kelly being sent down, at least on paper, to Belleville?
Well, I think it's a combination of two things. They need bodies down there, and also it saves some money. Like, don't ever underestimate this team's ability to save some money.
Right.
the daily payroll goes down when you send a guy down. So yeah. I think that probably had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, you always take these transactions with a grain of salt when it comes to the Sens because, I mean, throughout the course of the season, Gustafson, for example, he's been just up and down, and sometimes he didn't even go anywhere. It was just a case of, all right, we can do this, and there's money to be saved by doing this. So, but if Parker Kelly does in fact go down to Belleville, would you agree that it probably closes out his American Hockey League career for this season? Because come Monday, I mean, you could say goodbye to Ennis, Sanford, Nick Paul, Gambrell. I think they're going to need Parker Kelly down the stretch in all likelihood.
Yeah. Chris Tierney.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking into it because it's, you know, we were talking about the differences between having Ennis in the lineup and having Gaudette in the lineup. So I went and did some research to see, do they ever play together in the same game? Right? Like, it just seems like one goes out, one comes in, but you're not even going to have that luxury anymore after Monday, because you're if they're able to offload some of the lesser lights, and if it comes to the unfortunate circumstance that you trade Nick Paul, then yeah, Parker Kelly's back up here and up here for the rest of the season.
So trade deadline Monday, the Sens are going to be in seller mode, I guess. You know, with all the restrictions we just talked about, with all the conditional things due to injury. But if they do anything, it'll be via seller mode, is purging the obvious UFAs who aren't in their plans and getting what they can. But after that, I think, you know, they need to move into buyer mode at some stage this summer. I mean, right now, there's part of me that goes, okay, well, why are you doing that right now? Well, anybody the Sens might be interested in, you know, that veteran, we've won before kind of guy. Those guys they're not going anywhere right now. Teams are holding on to those guys because they think they can make a run. I think you need to do this, move into buyer mode this summer when you can find teams who are in cap hell and maybe help them out a little bit. You know what I mean?
The thing is that everybody seems to think that if I'm a buyer, I'm only going to buy from a seller. And if I'm a seller, I'm not buying. But a seller can certainly buy from another seller. Like, what's to prevent the Senators from making a deal for a Brock Besser? Here's a guy, you just said contract, or sorry, salary cap hell. Vancouver's in a bit of a bind. Brock Besser's a guy who's available. So that might be a fit. So I'm still holding out hope that there's a possibility that they might be able to find somebody on Monday who can fit one of their two main needs. And Arizona's out there too. And you've got, it's two for one day there. You can go to Arizona and get both of your needs filled between Chychrun on defense and Keller up front, right? Why am I drawing a blank? Yeah, you can get both of them right there. I just want them to do it right. That's, I don't care whether they sell to on Monday or buy. I don't care what happens, who moves. It doesn't matter. I just want them to get it right in the end. Whoever it is that they bring in here as a top six forward and as a top four D better bloody well be an established top six forward. I don't want some guy from some other team that you think could be a top six. And if he plays, we move him here. And oh yeah, he just needs ice time and an opportunity. I don't want that. I want a bona fide top six forward. I want a bona fide top four D.
Right. And it's a tricky thing though, when you think that this is not a coveted market right now, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think there's a reputation that this organization has right now. And those players, a lot of them will have no movement clauses. And I think a lot of them will say, if an Ottawa deal is struck with their current team, they might just go ahead and say, I don't think so. Not until they kind of get their act right over there. Because I'm looking at the team right now. They're about to miss the playoffs for their fifth year in a row. And think about that for a second, Greg. You go back to that expansion year in 92, 93, 30 years ago. We all remember how bad that was with just 10 wins because the expansion rules were just a joke. So that team was building from absolute scratch, and they gave them garbage to work with all due respect to the players who played on that team. They were uniquely horrible. And yet, even that team found its way to the playoffs within that five-year span. So the Sens were obviously not at scorched earth 5 years ago in this rebuild. And it's another reason why the team, you know, guys around the league are going, okay, I'm not sure Ottawa's where I want to be, at least at this stage of the game.
Uniquely horrible. Well, yeah, I see what you're saying. So that, what does that mean? That, or how does that impact Ottawa? Well, it impacts Ottawa in that it's not necessarily going to be a guy who has a no move or a no trade.
Right. I'm saying it limits your options, obviously, you know, because everybody's saying, oh, we got to get a veteran in here, a guy who's won before, guy's not too old, got lots left in the tank. Well, that guy probably has a no movement clause.
Exactly. So it's a younger guy who is maybe in his first post entry level contract and doesn't have quite the leverage with the no trade thing. It screams at me that it has to be a real live quote hockey trade. It can't be a little shuffle here and a little do magic and sprinkle some beans and oh, we got the guy. It's going to have to actually be a hockey trade. I believe, right? So unless it's one of those, we'll take a bit of money back. You take a little bit of, you know, they're playing with salary implications and AAV on this guy and that guy, and they make it work that way. But I really think it's going to be a guy 25 to 28 who doesn't have a team control, probably a guy with at least one, if not 2 years left on his deal that you can bring in here who, bang, he's a top six guy.
Why would anybody part with a guy like that? Whether you're rebuilding or whether you're a Stanley Cup contender, those are the guys you kind of hang on to, right? And all the Sens have to offer is picks and prospects. So take the contenders off the table and the rebuilding teams. Well, like the Sens, they're also rebuilding still. Anyway, I know what you're saying. It's just going to be hard to find a dance partner with all the variables at play here, both on and off the ice.
Here's a question for you.
Okay.
Is it possible that this is Pierre Dorion's career? Is his future employment is hinging on his ability to make these acquisitions, to acquire these players? Is his future employment hinging on it? And let's not then underestimate that type of a motivation when it comes to making a deal and finding a way to get it done. Do you think there's pressure on him in that sense?
I would think so. I think that if they're not a playoff team next year, he's for sure gone. But I'll never say because they just, I mean, both DJ Smith and, because there's a lot of talk about it, particularly after that Columbus loss, people are getting really frustrated and impatient. And, a lot of people are saying, oh yeah, get rid of Dorion, get rid of DJ Smith. I think we beat that drum in the past. I think I called for a coaching change several months ago, but I think with both of them with 3-year extensions, we all know ownership is just not that interested in paying for two people to do a job, which is what you'd effectively be doing if you removed either Dorion or Smith.
So here's a, here's another way to look at it. Then you said that definitely if they don't make the playoffs, they're probably out of here. Well, I'm saying, what if they're not on a playoff pace by November? What if we have another one of these horrible starts? What was it? 2 years in a row? Was it not 2-9 or something? Mm-hmm. If they do that again, do we have a coaching change here by Halloween? You know, by American Thanksgiving?
I would absolutely.
You would want it. You would agree with it, but would it actually happen?
Yeah, hard to say for the reasons I indicated with the long extension they just got. But yeah, I mean, it would be a joke if you start a third season in a row terribly. That would be unforgivable, and you'd have to go in probably 30 other markets. You would be gone, but I'm not sure here.
But even on the don't want to pay two guys like the GM you fired plus the new GM. Well, Pierre McGuire's sitting around. They're paying him a salary. They can just pay him a little few extra bucks and promote him to GM. Don't replace him, right? And you've got one guy here doing the job who was here anyway, and it's maybe not that big a deal on the bottom line. But when it comes to the coach, yeah, if you're going to remove that coach, then again, maybe it's a man. Maybe it's Jack Capuano. You know, you could still promote from within, and it's somebody you were paying anyway. Now you're just going to pay him a little more.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee Jack Capuano and Pierre McGuire will be the next brain trust for this team. When that is, I'm not sure, but that has been the MO of this team in the past, and I think it will be again here. Let's move on, though, to talk about the most recent game. Don't want to spend a ton of time because it's a little bit in our rearview mirror now. Their 4-1 loss, the Sens lost to Columbus. And, man, just the breakdowns in that game. Come on. I mean, the Sens were up 1-0 on that nice goal, Shabata Ennis. And then what the hell is Zaitsev doing I've never seen an NHL player do that. It looked like a 2-on-2 situation. And Shabbat's got his guy on the left side on his left D. And Zaitsev, for some reason, just goes over and skates right next to Shabbat and leaves the guy the left wing just able to come down Main Street. It's the dumbest looking play I've ever seen a defenseman make.
You know, we hadn't discussed this at all beforehand.
No.
And that was exactly my first question about that game was, what the hell was he doing? He was not just on the left side of the ice. He was outside the dot line on the left side of the ice. And he just kind of, you watch him kind of gliding over there. And he's going forward at first, right? Gliding over there. Like, I'm screaming. Like, what are you doing? Where are you going, you moron? And then, oh, look, shocker. Somebody gets a breakaway pass down where you're supposed to be. Like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, I'd encourage anybody to look at that. If you're still on Team Zaitsev, I encourage anybody to look at the video replay of Columbus's first goal in their 4-1 win over the Sens and ask yourself the question, where is this guy's brain? It's like sometimes in the heat of battle, you see, okay, brain goes on tilt because there's fire all around you. It's just chaos. No, this is a standard skating backwards and just all of a sudden, I think I'll go over here and help Thomas Shabbat, who's in no trouble at all. Just unbelievable mental breakdown there. Anyway, so that was the play that got the game tied. And then the next goal wasn't much better in that Thomas Shabbat goes off on a change. And it was, I don't know if it was Shabbat going off slowly or Brännström coming on slowly, but that was the slowest change I've ever seen. And it resulted in a big old stretch pass from the Columbus goal line all the way to the Sens blue line. And all of a sudden it's 2-1. That's your game winning goal. And that was that. So two major, major breakdowns on the blue line.
And one of the rare bad body language. Did you notice it? After the goal, Brännström still glides around behind the net from his right lane around behind the net coming out on the other side. And he his shoulders, he throws his arms up in the air. And that's one of the rare instances where I've seen something like that from the Senators in any way, shape, or form. Right. It was like he was ultimate frustration there. And he, no doubt saying to himself, what the you know, what nice change jobs, you know, like, what are you doing to me?
Yeah. And I know that you can say that will be Shabbat's final shift of the season. He basically had fractured the hand on the collision on the end boards and then disappeared for a bit and then came back for that shift. And he obviously decided, okay, I can't play anymore, but that doesn't excuse the change. Whether it's Shabbat's fault or Brännström, it sounds like, you know, based on Brännström's body language, he wasn't very happy with the way Shabbat came off there and left him kind of hanging out to dry. Got to be better than that. And I know that was unique circumstances. You got a fractured hand, you're a frustrated dude, but still got to get off the ice faster than that.
Yeah, I pretty much you can wrap that game up in one simple statement. They did not play well enough to compete and win, but did not play bad enough to get blown out of the rink.
Right.
That's it.
Coaching question.
Sure.
Why is DJ Smith putting Artem Zub in the penalty box to serve a puck over glass penalty? What in the F? Help me.
That's another one that when it happened, I went, because normally Brady Tkachuk sits those, right? He sits those because a quality player who's going to be the guy to jump on the ice when it's killed. But I was sitting there thinking, what is he doing? Like, he kills penalties for you. Did you forget that?
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, okay, is Capuano trying to undermine DJ? Because he runs the D. Was Capuano say, hey, Zuby, go sit this one for us, buddy. You know, let's watch DJ's reaction to this. Yeah. Like, what the hell was that? I have no explanation.
Yeah, totally bizarre. Totally bizarre. All right, let's take a time out of the program. When we return, a bit of trivia. Greg's got some trivia for you to think about here. What is the record, the Sens record, against losing teams this season? I think you'll be shocked at how bad it is. That's coming up after these words. Did you know that Jim K. Ford has been around since 1982, one of the longest running dealerships in Ottawa? The K family always proudly strives to provide the best service in the automotive market with the help of their fantastic team of professionals. See what the Jim K. Ford team of professionals are all about. Shop for your next vehicle and order it your way exactly to your specs at jimkford.com. They're at 1438 Uville Drive in Orleans. And as we continue along with the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast, the answer to the question, what is the Senators' record this season against losing teams? You hit me with that, and I was like, oh, God, that's depressing.
Yeah, and actually, our friend AJ discussed this. I heard AJ talking about this.
Okay.
The Sens' record against non-playoff teams, 5 wins, 15 losses, 1 overtime. Is that an overtime loss? 5-15-1. They are 2-1 against Buffalo and 2-0 against New Jersey. So if you take those 4 wins, 2 against Buffalo, 2 against New Jersey out, their record against non-playoff teams not named Buffalo and New Jersey is 2-16-1. That's, as you would say, Steve, this just in, not good.
Well, it speaks to a team that maybe has a little misplaced confidence. That maybe, yeah. You know, you've had a few good games against contenders. You know, remember, we all know how good the Florida Panthers are. Like some games I watch them, and it sounds like they might get better in the next couple of days here with Claude Giroux. That's still a possibility. But they look like the Harlem Globetrotters at times. They're just so good with the puck. And somehow, some way, the Sens beat them 8-2. So they have good games against really good teams. And maybe they get a little bit too cool for school, a little bit big for their britches, potentially. Don't know. But that's all part of the learning process. So, anyway.
It's funny, though. There's just as many times the Sens look like the Washington Generals.
How dare you say that in the Sens Nation podcast. Also on the trivia front, I thought this might be fun to go through. Because at the trade deadline, there's always this notion of you got to make the big deal. You know, if you're a contender, you know, your window for winning is a very small one. So you have to make sure you go for it. And I thought it'd be fun because we think back to the New York Islanders and some of the, Butch Goring deals and things that they made that really helped put them over the top, or the Pittsburgh Penguins getting Ron Francis at the deadline and going on to win a cup. But the reality is only one team wins the Stanley Cup, right? And so you have to be careful at the deadline that you don't give up the future for bringing in one guy that so rarely actually does make a difference and pushes you to a Stanley Cup, I thought it'd be fun to go back and look at the last 5 years and what the Stanley Cup champion each year actually did at the deadline. Right.
Cool.
So let's go back to 2017, the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Before you start, I think that might be the last one where they acquired a big name at the deadline and he contributed and they won. Was that the year of Mark Recchi?
No.
Mark Recchi to Boston. Sorry. Mark Recchi to Boston, I think, is the last major deadline deal contributor to a cup.
In 2011, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I can tell you, well, you've taken a bit of the wind out of my sails.
I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. That's okay. But these last 5 years, there just hasn't been any real, wow, eye-popping things going on. 2017, the Pittsburgh Penguins at the deadline, they won the Stanley Cup. And, of course, they had to go.
Ron Hainsey.
The Senators, yeah. Ron Hainsey, who'd be a Senator. And then Mark Streit, they also picked up at the deadline as well. So they improved their blue line, though neither will be confused as a Norris Trophy candidate. 2018, the Washington Capitals picked up, also on the blue line, Michael Kempney and Kevin Shattenkirk. 2019, the St. Louis Blues. Of course, they had that amazing turnaround. January 1st, they were dead last overall in the league and then go on to win the cup. Michael Delzato acquired for a sixth rounder, did not play in the playoffs. So not a lot of impact there. In 2020, Tampa Bay, some nice players there with Blake Coleman and Barclay Goodrow. But again, neither would be truly elite. And in 2021, David Savard was acquired to play in their bottom six for the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I found that kind of interesting that as we get to the trade deadline here and all these top teams are swinging for the fences, I mean, the reality is the champions really haven't been doing much of late.
Well, I think it speaks to the quality of those teams to begin with. If you've got a team that already has a solid top six and a top four, all you're really looking for is, or all you should be looking for historically, now the data says, all you should really be looking for is third line and bottom 2D or depth D, which is what all of those guys were. Like, really, the only big contributors, Kempney was big in Washington. The two, Goodrow and Coleman, were huge to Tampa. But again, Tampa didn't need to acquire a superstar. They weren't out looking for a number two center because they were already a Stanley Cup contender. They've got some pretty good centermen there. They were looking for third line guys. And that's why I mentioned Tampa with you here on this show, I don't know, maybe a month or two ago, with wouldn't Paul and Brown look great as being their two guys on the third line they acquire this year.
I wonder if there's a disruption factor, though, at play. I mean, you've probably seen it before. When somebody gets brought into a dressing room that's in pretty decent shape, that's doing well, then you bring in a new face or two, and you think that'll help just on paper because they're really good players, but it just sort of upsets the apple cart. Do you think that's ever at play in some of these NHL deals at the deadline?
I think it probably plays a decision. It plays a part in the decision-making because you need to have quality people. You need to have people of strong character. You need to have team guys who understand, like, you played all year on the third line of the first or second place team, and suddenly somebody comes in who takes your spot. Oops, you could have a bruised ego there, but if people have the right makeup, then they're probably okay with it. Hey, we're getting better. This is good. I like this. Like, that's the first reaction that you want out of somebody who's going to be displaced, a potential displaced player. I still go back to the quote of Anders Kaller following the 84 Olympics when Pat Flatley joined the Islanders. Mm-hmm. Like, in February, he comes into the dressing room and he's shaking hands with everybody. And he went up to Anders Kaller. He said, "Hi, I'm Patrick Flatley." And Anders Kaller said, "Hi, I'm history." shook his hand. That's a classic in my mind.
Yeah,
but let's face it, you coach too, and any team, any group of employees, any team of any type, it's always split into thirds. You've got a third who are with you and are gung-ho and are all part of the show and want to be there and are thrilled. You've got that bottom third that might be the disgruntled group. The key is the middle third. You need the top third to pull the middle third up, as opposed to the bottom third pull the middle third down. And only a good GM and a good coach who know their players and their makeup know what type of team they have and how much of a disruption it could be bringing in a player late.
Yeah, I mean, any coaching I did was all minor hockey, so I never, you know, added anybody. But what I did notice is that every once in a while there'd be an injury, and sometimes that could change. Mm-hmm. Suddenly this player just disappears from things and sometimes doesn't even come to the games. And sometimes, you know, all of a sudden, suddenly playing really well now is kind of addition by subtraction. So my point is that the tweaking that you do at the deadline or any time of the year really can sometimes disrupt things, whether it's from a hockey perspective, right? Some guys, a fill-in, and maybe Eric Brandstrom suddenly going to fill in for Thomas Chabot, and we all go, holy moly, that actually looks pretty damn good. Who knows exactly? Yeah, I think about the Matt Duchene thing when they acquired him. This was at the basically the start of the downfall in this whole 5-year rebuild. They bring in Matt Duchene. Not a person listening right now was anything but excited when he was acquired. Sens gave up a lot for him, but it's Matt Duchene. He's played in the Olympics and everything like that. The team just went into an absolute tailspin after they got Matt Duchene. That's not necessarily on him. Might be a personality thing. I don't know. I'm not in that room. But it might just be a hockey scenario. Duchene started taking someone else's minutes. You know, suddenly a line wasn't together. Whatever it was, it went really, really badly. So it'll be interesting to see how teams do with their deadline deals and which teams thrive and which teams absolutely, you know what, to the bed. Other Sens news, Philip Dow signed his entry-level contract, and he's been very good with St. John. And he started the year with Belleville for some reason. I always found that interesting. We did talk about it in an old episode, but I did think that was an odd scenario where, you know, there's a guy still junior eligible and you're putting him in Belleville. That's usually the act of saved for guys who are, you know, first rounders and second rounders. Like Philip Dow is not a top draft pick and was an odd choice, I thought, to put him in Belleville. Must have spoke to the fact that he had a great camp. Nice fast skater, good offensive upside, and he's doing well, more than a point a game with St. John. But that was odd to put him in Belleville this year to start.
Yeah, just at the time we did discuss it, didn't we? And it was, well, what's going on in the queue? Are they starting? Are they not starting? And the, is it a reward factor? We never really did get a full answer as to what the thinking was behind it, but the kid did okay.
Yeah, no doubt.
And Tyler Boucher scored a goal this week.
Well, that's something.
He's coming on. He's coming on.
Yep. No, I'm taking a wait and see attitude. I'm just, I'm just, my thought, as we mentioned in the last episode, if you're a 10th overall selection and then the team was right to take you there, then we need to see, okay, we need to see this guy really light it up in the amateur ranks.
And that was one of the other quotes from the media availability of Pierre Dorion there earlier. About Tyler Boucher, he said every team that wins has a Tyler Boucher type in their lineup.
Yeah,
I agree with you. But did he have to come 10th? Like, obviously, you identified Tyler Boucher as that's the type of player, and we think he's the best of that type of player, so we need him on our team for 4 years from now. Mm-hmm. All right, but was that still the right time to take him? Who knows? Yeah.
So deadline day is coming up Monday, as mentioned, and it looks like Claude Giroux is on the move, and he is not going to play in Ottawa against the Flyers. So that's kind of interesting, and it seems like he's trying to decide between the Florida Panthers and the Colorado Avalanche as we're recording this. As you're hearing it, it might have already gone down, but I mean, the rich get richer. I mean, Giroux added to either Florida or Colorado. That's just absolutely ridiculous when you think about it. Those two teams are already loaded for bear.
Yeah, it's crazy, huh? It's like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers, right? The rich get richer, or the Blue Jays now. The Blue Jays get richer too these days.
Do they ever? Yeah, Matt Chapman was a great pickup. They got that Japanese pitcher whose name escapes me at the moment. they look fantastic, and they picked up, of course, Kevin Gausman, one of the top free agent pitchers out there in the offseason. So yeah, they look as good as anybody. I think they already have the batting order in place. Now the starting rotation is going, and it's going to be good.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too. Closing it out today, Greg, you were a big New York Islander fan back in the day. We would be remiss if we did not tip our cap to the great career and life of Jean Potvin, who passed away this week at the age of 72. That would be Denny Potvin's older brother. Was an Ottawa native and an Ottawa 67 back in the day for a couple of years, and a pretty decent NHL career as well. As an old Islander fan, any memories of Jean Potvin?
Well, my biggest memory is that it was sort of the first time historically that a team went out and acquired somebody strictly to work and help the new young phenom.
Right.
You know, it's not uncommon these days, but really Jean Potvin was acquired to keep his brother comfortable, to help his brother be comfortable and break into the NHL. You know, nowadays you see it where teams acquire, I think back to the Pittsburgh Penguins acquiring Yuri Herdina from Calgary. Like, what the hell for? Well, to help Jágr. He was a Czech. You know, there's all kinds of things like that where teams go out and acquire people to work with the young kids, to be a mentor, to be a leader, and especially when it's a cultural thing and a language barrier. And that was Jean Potvin's sort of role with the Islanders was, yeah, you're here. He was probably no more than a 5 or 6 defenseman in his day, but he was there to make sure that Denny was comfortable and adjusted to the NHL properly.
Yep. One of the neat things that I would encourage people to listen to, most fans would remember Bobby Nystrom's overtime goal. Even if you weren't old enough to be around for it when it happened, you've probably seen the highlight of it. It was the first Stanley Cup for the Islanders, starting off their 4-year dynasty. Nystrom scores in overtime. Uniondale goes crazy. And on the radio call, Jean Potvin was not a part of that playoff run, though he played most of the regular season that year. I don't know if it was injury, healthy scratch, or what it was, but it was interesting because as Nystrom is scoring the goal, you can hear Jean Potvin in the background while the play-by-play guy is doing his thing, going, yes, 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 because it's a rare thing indeed. We all hear homers as color analysts. It's a rare thing indeed where you hear the color analyst actually win a Stanley Cup ring as with a microphone in front of his face, because that's it. That was his current teammates down in the ice. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Kind of a cool thing.
I think of the TV call. It was, and there's a trivia for you. It was Dan Robson doing the TV call on CBC.
Cool.
Yeah. Seven minutes gone in overtime. Henning pass, running a stick at Tinelli, coming in with Nystrom. Tinelli to Nystrom. He scores. Bob Nystrom scores the goal. The Islanders win the Stanley Cup. Yeah, I remember it well.
There's an old Islander fan, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies, so that'll do it for this week's show. We love your feedback and your takes on the Sens, and our website is sensnationhockey.com. Pat McGuire, by the way, has a new article up there, Senator Report Cards at the 3-quarter turn. So give that a read, and of course, all kinds of different things going on there as well, including how you can contact us. So check it out, sensnationhockey.com. Greg, enjoy your day. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
For sure. Enjoy the game tonight, Steve.
Thanks for being with us on the Jim K. Ford Sens Nation podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. Share the show with your friends and followers, or become a member on Patreon. Check out our website today at sensnationhockey.com.